You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted to fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh well, guess beggars can't be choosy. Wanted to receive attention from my music. Wanted to be left alone in public, excuse me. Supporting my cake and eat it too.
The monster. Good morning. Interesting. You know, the monster is kind of interesting. And you know, it's now we've been doing this program for over a year. This thought just came to me. It wasn't part of the original opening of the program, but it changes. The monster changes, and you see it in different forms. You know, and even in the last 2 weeks, you know, spurred by an interest in me lie. Kind of takes us to a, the thought of, well, what was it like to lead in that environment? Was Vietnam that different? We hear all these different things associated with Vietnam. We hear drugs, we hear rape, we hear fragging, we hear all these different things. What was it like? Then you talk to the guys that were there. Yesterday we talked to two guys, and they both fought essentially pretty much the same place, and that was the highlands south of they're called the Central Highlands, just south of the DMZ, and so their fight was not with the Viet Cong. They weren't in and out of major firm bases all the time. They were out in and out of smaller ones, and they were out fighting the NVA. So their war is different. But everybody I've spoken with has said the same thing so far. The leaders I've spoken with have said the same thing, and that is this. Leadership is leadership. Vietnam certainly had its nuances, but it was no different than the nuances of any place else we've ever fought. And when you have bad leaders, you have bad outcome. Which to me seems right. That Vietnam wasn't unique, that whenever we've expanded our military and gone places, you've had bad things happen, it's part of what happens. Now, not that anybody accepts that, because I'm curious, we're a different force now. We're an all-volunteer force, and I think you reduce the amount of that stuff in an all-volunteer force, because people sign up because they want to be part of that professional force. Nobody's compelled to. So you don't have that element there. So I think it's an interesting discussion. We'll continue it, certainly. So good Thursday morning to you. Mike McNamara for a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Yesterday, the president tweeted, his policy on transgender service. So John Ubaldi of the Ubaldi Reports will join me now, and we'll talk about it. Now, I will tell you this up front, okay? Ubaldi is an infantryman. I'm an infantryman. The people on this program tend to be skewed towards combat arms work. Okay, we share, I think, a common view. And so, which is not exactly the touchy-feely view of the planet. I'm going to tell you that right now. So, we'll get his thoughts on that. And you'll hear mine as well. I'll give you mine right now. If you're post-op and you can pass the psychological test and the physical requirements, my own opinion is you should be allowed to serve. Right? Your gender now is hopefully firmly established. and congruent with who you are. So you're at peace emotionally, and you want to serve. If you can pass the psychological and physical stuff, then that's fine. However, if you're not settled between your brain and your body, you don't have a right to serve. Okay? If that's not settled, then you should not be in the military. And you shouldn't be in the military for this reason. The military's job is to fight. To go to deploy to different parts of the world and to fight. Okay? It's not to sit in CONUS and collect paychecks. We have a military to do one thing, to go and fight. If you can't be part of that for an extended period of time, for any reason, be it your mental health, be it your physical health, you're processed for a discharge. So if you're on active duty and you decide that you want to change sexes, in my opinion, you should be medically discharged, psychologically discharged. You should be given an honorable discharge. Go about your way. Go be who you want to be. But it's not fair to the other people who occupy your military occupational specialty for you to go in some kind of non-deployable status for years so that you can have this done. Not fair. Not right. Now, we'll get into the politics a little bit later. So to me, you should be screened for it. And you should sign a paper saying, while I'm on active duty, I understand that should I decide to change my gender, I'll be discharged. All right. If you're on the backside of that whole event, then, and you want to serve, as long as you pass everything, I don't have an issue with it. But it's not fair. And I'll tell you this, pregnancy alone is hard on the Marine Corps. Because guess what? You're not an interchangeable piece, and that screws us up. So we have 9 truck drivers in the section, right? We're now deploying to 29 Palms for an exercise for 2 months. We need truck drivers. Okay? And Lance Corporal XYZ says, I'm pregnant. Well, guess who's not going to drive her truck? XYZ. Now guess who's going? ABC's got to go. Well, ABC's married. He just got back off a deployment to Africa for 6 months. It's not his turn to go. Guess what, ABC? Pack your shit. You're going to the desert. ABC's wife throws a fit. Sorry. Right? I know he wasn't on the list, but he's got to go. It's not fair. Yeah, no shit, it's not fair. Okay, now that's pregnancy. It creates problems in deploying units. And other people pay the price for it. Okay? To put yourself in a non-deployable status for multiple years is, you can't do it. And the DOD shouldn't be asked to support it. So, again, if that takes additional paperwork, now, I don't think that the policy that he announced will be the one that's ultimately adopted by the DOD. I think that the president doesn't have a position that he's hard and fast on in his repertoire. He throws it out there, you know, maybe to please somebody, but I don't know that that's ultimately what will be adopted by the Department of Defense. And he can act benevolent and say, okay, here's what I've come to. But he's not that guy. All right? He's not that guy. And we've seen it on a whole host, just about every issue that he's thrown out there as this, you know, he makes an initial bombastic statement, and then where he ultimately comes down is very much closer to reality where the rest of the world lives. So we'll see about that. Anyway, good morning to you. So after we talk with Ubaldi about the transgender thing, we'll talk to a buddy of mine. Was introduced to me by Mike Frazier, who's a friend, and he now is one of the leaders of the Soldier Project. And we will talk to Michael McDowell. He's the executive director. And we met him before when he was the admin and chief operations officer at the Cohen Military Family Clinic at the University of Southern California. So he's moved on. So we'll catch up with him, find out what he's doing. We'll find out about the Soldiers Project. And let me just, the mission of the Soldiers Project, pretty interesting mission. And you're seeing more and more of organizations like this. We provide free, confidential, and unlimited mental health services to any active duty service member or veteran who has served since September 11, 2001. We provide services to families and loved ones, too, wives, husbands, partners, parents, and children. We don't turn anyone away based on discharge status, branch of service, or whether they saw combat. If you served, you get seen. Okay. So that's the mission. And, so we'll talk to Mike, and then, the gunner will join us. So, a very good morning to you. United States Marine Corps Band has to get in here and say good morning. Nice. Our honor clean. Do you think they knew that back then? That was, they were going to admonish us in our own song? Because they knew? That's the mental health line in the song. And to keep our honor clean. Because you got to live with it, bro.
Country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
Well, one thing might keep him awake. POTUS tweeting DOD policy. That might keep him awake. Currently 78 degrees in Quantico under partly sunny skies. Camp Lejeune, sunny in 84. Granbury, Texas, sunny in 85. Big Timber, Montana, warm already, 71. Mostly sunny. They got fires going on up in Montana. 29 Palms, 83 and sunny. Camp Pendleton, cloudy in 62. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy, 78. Okinawa, dark cloudy, 86. Rock has warmed up a little bit. 109 degrees there right now, late in the afternoon. The home of All Marine Radio, 66 degrees under partly cloudy skies, headed for 80 today in beautiful Southern California. We're going to take a break. John Ubaldi, of the heat of the Ubaldi reports, going to join us as we get it going here on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio on your home for All Marine Radio, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, BattleMug.com.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer, but I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Two on the West Coast here. Joining me from the East Coast, where he went for a swim this morning and broke out in a sweat because it's about 90 degrees in the Gulf of Mexico, is John Ubaldi of the Ubaldi Reports. Master Guns, how you doing? How was that? How was that hot swim you had going today?
I mean, it was 86 degrees in the pool, and it was like this was at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Hey, that's what you get for living the life of a jackass, man. Yeah, God punishing you for you baldy. Let me dial up the heat in Tampa. So, heat, humid, nice. Like living in a third world country. Good for you.
That's what it is. It's one of the things you live out here. Oh, plus our no state income tax. I know you guys have it a little different out there. In the People's Republic of California.
Yeah, it's really interesting in Florida because nobody pays for anything. It's all free. Because there is no state income taxes, somehow or other the government doesn't collect any money, and yet they provide all those services. It's amazing. It's a miracle in Florida.
Well, they balance a budget, too. Not on paper, but they actually balance a budget.
Oh, and they have sales tax, yes?
They have sales tax, they have property taxes, but they just
That's how they pay. Oh, so it's not all free. They just migrated some other form of revenue collection. Okay.
That's right, but like California has sales tax, property tax, state income tax, any tax, they'll have a tax on everything.
I'm sure it's interesting. There's a show in there. Regardless of how they collect it, who collects the most revenue per capita? Okay, so you take the population and you divide it by the revenue the state collects in all forms. Who do you think collects the most money?
That's a good question to look at. The other thing is who has the most, I know they rate them the states across the country. Who's the most fiscally sound of all the states?
I looked that up the other day. Let me read you the president's tweet from yesterday. And I say this, first of all, the people I tend to have on the show are people I've crossed paths with in life, which means they skew to the combat arms. You might not hear this discussion if Master Guns was a disperser. And I was a
cook,
data dink, right? But we're not. We're both infantrymen, so the president yesterday, in his Trump, what he did was he removed transgender service. From the menu. And here's his tweet. After consulting with my generals and military experts, please be advised. That's Trump didn't write this. Somebody else did. Please be advised that the United States government will not accept nor allow transgender individuals to serve in any capacity in the military. Our military must be focused on decisive and overwhelming victory and cannot be burdened with the tremendous medical costs and disruption that transgender in the military would entail. And then he says, thank you. Okay, so your reaction, first of all, were you surprised by not just the tweet, but the absolute prohibition of service?
Well, the thing, what surprised me was, because last month, Secretary of Defense General Mattis said, we're going to take a 6-month, he's going to hold off, and we're going to look at it for the next 6 months, and then we're going to come back and give our findings of what we should do. So I don't know why he jumped ahead of that. So that was a big surprise for me, is why did he move ahead? And I don't know if General Mattis was on board. It sounded like General Mattis was on a personal vacation, so... But that's another subject.
Exactly.
Issue on that. I think it goes back to, do we think transgender should serve? And I think your opening part was correct, is we both came from the combat arms. And to me, it just really disrupts that whole unit cohesion that is necessary for what the mission of the Department of Defense is, to fight and win the nation's wars.
Okay, what's disruptive? I'll lay out my position, and you can take issue with it if you choose to.
Okay.
Right. I only served in a mixed gender unit once. Okay. Pregnancy is a burden to the unit. Okay.
Correct.
And I gave an example a few minutes ago of we're truck drivers, and I just get back from a deployment to Africa where I've been there for 6 months. Now, what I expect is not to have to, you know, I'm a truck driver, so I'll drive my truck, but I expect to be on base and kind of in a little bit of a down period because I've been gone. I've got a wife and I've got young kids and I come home but Ubaldi gets pregnant. We're going to the desert to drive trucks in support of XYZ exercise. Guess who's now going to the desert for 2 months? And my wife says, hey, that's bullshit, man. He just got back. Hey, look, I only have X amount of truck drivers. And she's pregnant. She can't do it. So he's got to go. I don't have a choice. Well, can't you get somebody else? From where? Nobody else wants to help us. Everybody's got their dealing with the same issues. Okay. So you go. Now, that's tough enough. So a Marine comes to me and says, I need to change my sex. And I say, okay. You now, because of the psychological stuff you have to do, the physical hormone therapy and all the rest of it you have to do, you're non-deployable for how many years? It's not fair. It's not right. Now, if you're post your surgery and you're full up round, you're at peace with yourself psychologically and physically, you can pass the test, I don't have so much of a problem because then you're, to me, like everybody else. I don't have a problem with post-op transgender service. But I think people should be screened. You're not going to be allowed to do that while you're on active duty. You have to commit that while you're here, you're going to be the same sex when you leave as when you got here. That's the gig. So that's my position. There's nobody that can serve according to his policy, which I don't believe he'll stick to, by the way.
Sure, I would agree with that.
Because he doesn't stick to anything that he announces. There's nobody that can stay in service if you're post-op, if you're a highly functioning, you know, performing member of the United States military. You've got to go. So that burden, I think, is a greater burden than the United States military should have to bear. And I would draw you, a similar line. We have these things called force preservation boards that you've heard us talk about. You get the sick, the lame, and the crazy in front of these boards. Most of them are behavioral issues. and these people have been designated as at-risk people. And my consistent comment when I would sit on these boards is, why the fuck are we keeping this person? How much therapy is it going to take to get this person to be fully deployable where we don't have to hold them by their hand and supervise them all the fucking time? And if the answer to that is, well, we're not sure, well, it's going to be a year, get them the fuck out. Get us somebody who can deploy. Get us somebody who can do a somersault, who can get knocked down and stands back up with most of their equipment still on. I don't need another fucking train wreck and disaster to fuck up my unit more, because the Marine Corps is on a operational tempo that would blow your vacuum tube. Between exercises and real world shit, they go all the fucking time, way more than we used to go. And so you're on the move all the time. And you don't need more lame, more crazy. You need less of that shit. So, with that said as a preamble, you have the floor, Ubaldi. Where do you come?
No.
Where do you shake out?
The way I shake out on this is, one, it takes care of the effects of unit cohesion. But the biggest point is what you mentioned. When I first came in, just like when you first came in, a lot of the social problems we didn't have to deal with. Like when I was in the infantry unit, I was a young PFC Lance Corp. There was nobody in the, if you were enlisted, you were typically, if you were married, you were probably a staff NCO or higher.
Right.
There was never, very few, if any, Lance Corporals, junior Marines, were married. When I got activated in 2001, and again, subsequent years after that, I spent more of my efforts dealing with family problems and all the like. Now, what you mentioned was somebody who gets pregnant. You mentioned this is a truck driver. What happens if you're an infantry unit? You're a sergeant, platoon sergeant, squad leader, company commander, platoon commander, and you go to your CO, hey, I'm pregnant, I can't deploy. Well, just get somebody else. Could the Patriots would have won the Super Bowl without Tom Brady? Probably not. When you train in the infantry, you are so close to each other. You know each other left and right and what they're going to do in any given situation. You start throwing all these other dimensions in there, and it affects unit cohesion, and it takes what the mission is. The mission is to fight and win the nation's wars. And it's all this stuff is going to be a distraction. And I would tell for the female Marines, typically you have more of the males want to become women. They want to be housing and living and showering with somebody.
Is it true?
What's that?
Is that true?
I would think there would be more of the males going female than female going to male. I don't have any statistics to back that up.
That was just your Italian genetics kicking in right there, giving me your...
Italian genetics.
Your Italian Spidey sense?
I'm just going I would think that would be more the norm, but I can't back it up with any facts. But okay, let's use that. Your female Marines want to be able to shower, sleep in the same room with somebody who have the same male anatomy, but they decide themselves they want to be female?
No, they don't want to.
I mean,
okay, but the guys are going to want to shower with him after he starts developing breasts, yes? They'll go for that.
I don't know about that one.
Are you kidding me?
We're
talking Marine infantrymen, all right? They'd be all over that. Check it out.
They'll be checking out as a freak show.
Yeah, exactly. Did you see the boobs on Larry? Holy smokes, man, that's awesome. Yeah, I can hear the conversation now. Hey, hold on. Hey, Larry, hold on. Second platoon wants to see. Hey, Bravo Company's on its way over here. Yeah, it'll be a carnival, for God's sakes. Go ahead.
It really takes away from what the mission of what they're trying to do. And the biggest argument for people who are pushing this, they've never served. And that goes back to a previous conversation we had a while ago, is You have more and more people have never served. More and more elected officials have no concept of what military life is like.
I know, but here's, but again, I would tell you the conversation doesn't even get that far. It's, okay, explain to me, who cares about the transgender issue in the district? Well, it's polling 75%. The people we asked, 75% say that they should be able to serve. Okay. How about in the importance index? Is this an important issue? No. All right, only 20% say it's an important issue. Okay, so it's not important and it's overwhelming. I'm not going to waste any political capital pushing against this. I'm for transgender service. Next issue. What else are we doing? Well, we got to grip it and rip it thing this afternoon at 1 o'clock. That's all set up, blah, 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 blah. Do you know what I mean? I mean, that's the extent to which it's not like it's a principled political stand that these people make. It's another issue on their agenda, and it contributes to their reelection, period. So I'm not sure that any of that is they don't even get into it that deep. They don't care that much.
The other bigger issue, though, is there's this divide right now. You've got a lot of the liberals who support this on both coasts, the left and the East Coast and the West Coast, where the Democrats are big strongholds are. But for the rank and file that voted for Donald Trump, people got to remember, it wasn't like they support the guy or like his policy. They just like he was different. He was going to do something different. And you got people who repudiate the values that middle America have. And this goes back to that. Trump is really hitting his base. They just repudiate. People who support this are repudiating the values that people have.
Okay, so what about the policy? Do you think your thoughts on the policy itself? Do you think people do you think that people ought to be allowed to change gender while they're on active duty?
No.
Why?
To me, I mean, I know that's a negligible cost, but to me, it's a cost thing and it's a time frame. You mentioned this earlier in your remarks. Someone goes through gender reassignment surgery. I mean, I don't know how long it takes before they fully get through, but they're non-deployable.
For years.
Your job, when you go in the infantry, your job is to grab your rifle when you deploy, and you're going. But if someone's non-deployable, that means someone's taking that person's spot. And we can't keep doing that. That affects the unit readiness. Let's say the company commander decides, I want to be a female, so he's out of the mix. They got to go find somebody else, and it just upsets everything. I mean, the social engineering of the military has got to end. We're fighting ISIS, Al Qaeda. We got the Russia, China.
Well, you know what? I don't know. I don't know that the social engineering has to end. What I would tell you is, operationally, you can't take people out of a deploying status
exactly
for years, and that's not right. That's not fair to the military. Here's an email. Mac, how about this? How about they go to a non-deploying unit, and that would be a three-year tour, and then normally you go to school. So there would be a period of time, let's say almost 4 years for a lot of people, that they're out of the operating forces and are in non-deployable status. Can gender reassignment be done in that period of time? If it could, might not that be a way that the DOD could support it? I don't know how long transgender.
But even on that question, you're still taking somebody else out of that unit and putting them in a non-deployable unit. Somebody's got to replace that person in that unit. And think of all the money, because the way it works, I mean, you know this. You go to your boot camp or OCS, then you go to your school, and off to the fleet you go. Well, if you take somebody out, somebody's got to replace that person. Is it fair to that person? I'm always standing up for these guys because they decide they want to do something different. Because the whole point of the military is going off and fight and defend the nation. I'm trying to take, I want to get gender reassignment so the government's going to pay. I'm going to go over here so I don't have to deploy.
All right, hold on. Somebody just sent me a link. This is the Massachusetts Transgender Political Coalition. Timeline of gender transition. The first phase is self-awareness and realization of gender identity. And it doesn't give a time frame on that. Seek assistance from mental health professional to help understand and undergo gender transition, a minimum of 3 to 6 months. Okay, so we're at 6 months. Change appearance and gender expression to coincide with desired gender, 6 months to a year. Now we're at 18 months. Coming out to friends, family, and or colleagues. All right, that's another year. All right, so now we're at 2.5 years. For some, this concludes their transition. For others, the process continues. Obtain referral from mental health professional for hormone therapy. 6 months. So now we're at 3 years. Assistance from a medical health professional to start hormone therapy, 2 weeks to 2 months. All right. So now we're still around 3 years. Obtain referral from medical health professional for those needing surgical procedures, 2 years. Minimum living as desired gender. So yet you live 2 years in your desired gender before you have your surgery, and then accumulating finances to undergo possible multiple surgical procedures to obtain a body that coincides with desired gender, 1 to 10 years. So how long? So, again, you're talking a lengthy process. So you're in a non-deploying status while you undergo all of this, multiple surgeries, the psychological piece. I mean, come on, that's ridiculous. So, again, when Ubaldi wants to become a woman and he walks in, he goes, "Hey, sir, you got a minute?" Like, I do. And I like Master Guns. We're both from Sacramento, right? We're Northern California guys. We're infantry guys. And he looks at me and says, "You know, I'm really a woman." And I look at him and I said, "I fucking knew it. I knew it, you both." You can't fool me. I could smell it a mile away. You had cross-dresser all over you. As much as I may like him, that's irrelevant. Where the hell am I going to park him for, let's just say, that's his 1 to 10 years, the medical stuff and all of that. Where am I going to park him for, let's just say, between 5 to 10 years from the time they decide this and go down that road? Where do I do that in the Department of Defense? And again, I don't care if it's a small number. There comes a point with post-traumatic stress that we cut people loose. Even though, you know, a lot of the guys that have picked up post-traumatic stress have done it in combat. They're our comrades. At some point, you have to say goodbye to them because they can't contribute anymore. They can't function. And it sucks.
Here's another thing that I was just thinking about when you were mentioning all this. When you hear that the cost is really that high and you put them in non-deployable units, where do you do these surgeries at? Because I know the base hospital is not prepared to do that. Most base hospitals on their military bases, they're not equipped to do this type of stuff.
Well, let me tell you, Mike Musselman said something that was pretty profound. Hey, if you think that you want the DOD involved in reengineering your private parts, You are dumber than a bag of hammers, okay? You are dumber than a bag of hammers. You should get, they can screw up taking a hangnail off. It would certainly have to be outsourced. But again,
even if you outsource it, think about where some of these military bases are. I mean, okay, if you're at Camp Pendleton out in Southern California, you'd probably go down to one of the major hospitals.
I would say that any major city has probably has surgeons that are able to do this. And you can certainly fly in and out. But your point is, what do you do with people? And again, I would just tell you this. There is a threshold in the United States military to be medically discharged because you can't, perform the functions of somebody in your military occupational specialty. And the causes could be psychological, they could be physical, they could be a combination of the two. But that's why you get med boarded out of the military. And so to me,
there's even a point. I mean, they're going through this, are they on light duty? You can only be on light duty for so long.
Right.
Then you have to go in front of a medical board. Because you can't be on light duty for 3 or 4 years. Are you medically fit to be on active duty?
Right. We would get rid of you if you were in a light duty status for that long. We would say, yeah, you're medically discharged.
Well, you would just
go on about your life.
Yeah, you go to a medical board, and the medical board screens you, how long you're going to be, and then they evaluate you, and either they say, okay, well, but you can stay in a little bit longer, or otherwise they let you go because you can't. You have to be in the deployable status.
Let me read you a couple emails. Here's the first one. Is military service a right? I don't think so. Is military service a right?
Well, I think it's more of a privilege to serve because the military can decide if they want you to serve. You can be too tall, too fat, too short.
Flat feet. Allergies.
Flat feet.
Colorblind. There's all kinds of things that disqualify you. So, no,
yeah,
it's not a right.
No, it's not.
This next email. I was reading from either Senator Biden, former Vice President Biden as well, and Senator McCain talking about the patriotic contributions of transgender people. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on that. Master Guns, on transgender people that have served patriotically.
I read Senator McCain's statement, and he kind of want to let the process go through from what the Department of DOD is doing. We're not questioning anybody's patriotism. We're questioning the process that goes through what we've all mentioned throughout this interview. That's what people, patriotism aside, that's great, but they're still going to be in the non-deployable unit for 3, 4, 5 years?
7, 8, 9, 10 years. Let me read you another email. Mac, I'm a bit surprised, to be honest with you, that you moronic infantry types actually have a moderately enlightened position on this. It sounds like you make no judgment on transgender people. It sounds like you make no judgment on their patriotism. Your concern is an operational concern. And just as with people who can't stay on full duty, you would have a problem with them in the same vein. Maybe you guys aren't as stupid as I thought you were. Have a great day. No, look, editorial comment on transgenders. Hey, man, whatever you want to be, go ahead and be. It's not my business. I don't certainly. I'll let the Italian speak here in a second, but you want to be whatever you want to be, go ahead. It doesn't bother me, okay? In terms of your patriotism, I would never question that.
That's a personal thing.
Yeah, the only reason I would question your patriotism is if by your behavior you gave me cause to question it. But other than that, that's not the issue. The issue is an operational issue. The example I use is pregnancy. Pregnancy is a pain in the ass. You lose somebody in your unit because they can't do the things that everybody else does. And somebody's jobs either cover for that person by going to the field more, by doing more, or you have to switch jobs and take somebody who may be an administrative person and train them to be a truck driver. All right, you're going to be a truck driver now. What? Yeah. And so, and that's problematic in units. And you deal with it. Did you deal with it? And so, all right, so your thoughts.
No, you're absolutely right, but I go back to from the infantry side.
No, go talk about patriotism, and being a knuckle dragger and judging them because they want to be transgender.
I mean, to me, if you want to do that, that's fine. But I'm never going to question someone's patriotism because that's personal to somebody. It's not my right unless you do something that puts me in question of what your loyalty's like. That's immaterial. Going back to this. You decide to do his transgender surgery, you could be in a key billet, you're gone, someone's got to fill that, and then it upsets that whole ecosystem in that unit. That unit needs to be tight. Again, I go back to...
Yeah, but here's the rebuttal to that. Yeah, but we've gone through this. We've gone through this when we integrated the military. We've gone through this when we went through... we dropped Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and you can serve openly. That was another adjustment to it. This is just one more adjustment to your social order there, knuckle dragger.
Well, the difference was the integration of blacks into the military. The difference was with gays serving openly. A gay man and a black man are still men.
Yeah.
They didn't have to go get surgery, reassignment surgery. They didn't have to do any of that stuff.
All right.
They weren't going on light duty for any medical procedure. This is a medical procedure. A man is still a man, no matter what color, no matter who he wants to hang out with. It's still the same.
Right.
This is something different. And you just alluded to it earlier. You go through all this process. It takes time. How long can you be on light duty? You can't. You have to, I think it's like 6 months, then they put you on a med board. Are you going to be able to be healed? If you're not, they medically discharge you. And then it's all the procedures. Okay, then they outsource it. Okay, Camp Pendleton's fairly close to San Diego and Los Angeles, but some bases aren't. What if there is nobody in these areas? You go to some places, let's say where Fort Bragg is, some of these other major Army bases. Are they close to a major metropolitan area that has the ability to do this?
I don't even think that even gets into I don't think you can't get beyond the in my opinion. And again, the Marine Corps is a deploying unit. It's not a CONUS unit. You know, the Air Force might be able to say, yeah, well, we could take care of this. You know, the Marine Corps is a deploying, you're a deploying organization. And so I don't think it's fair to the operating forces.
It's not
that somebody should be taken offline for that extensive a period of time. And here's another email. Just so I have the argument straight. Ask them before they enlist. Make sure they understand that they can't change their gender while on active duty. If they come to the recruiter's office and say, I'm a transgender male or female, you would take them based on their ability to pass the psychological and the physical tests of their gender. Yes, that's my position anyway. That's my position. If you're, Master Guns, your thoughts on post-op, is it okay to take post-op transgender people into the military? They're full up brown.
Yes.
They pass the psychological and physical tests. Take them. Is that okay?
I would have to think about that, but I mean, if they've gone through everything,
yep,
and they're post-op and they're not going to, and they will never get anything else associated with transgender. Yeah, maybe I'll be open to it. I would have to think that one through a little bit more, but I don't know if that's the case.
What do you mean?
You already laid out the process. And it's, I don't know where most of the transgenders who are serving now, where do they fit in this? Are they gone through the whole thing?
Yeah. That would be my read of the email. They've gone through the whole thing. They started when they were 15, and now they're 25, and they're through it. I'm a guy. If they can pass the psychological profile and the physical profile, would you allow them to enlist?
That's a tough one. So I guess if they've gone through the whole process and now they were a man, now they're a woman, or if they're a woman, now they're a man.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess then. But I guess as long as it's not going to impact the unit readiness.
No, and hypothetically, they pass all the psychological screening and the physical screening.
I guess that would be yes. I mean,
okay.
But they're now a man, and they've gone through all the screening, did everything like that. Yeah, I guess there'd be no problem.
Yeah. See, I mean, there's no knucklehead, knuckle dragon reason to keep them out because we don't like them. That isn't the issue. The ability to be deployable and do your job.
Job.
And that is already hard enough given the number of people that, you know, have medical issues, psychological issues. And the Marine Corps, I will tell you this, the Marine Corps is penchant to try to, you know, to try to do what's best for them before they kick them to the curb. And when I say kick them to the curb, I just mean we can't use them anymore. They need to be in the custody of their families, people that care about them, so they can get the appropriate care that they need. Okay, because again, if your job is to go to the field, to deploy, to redeploy people, and you're working long, stressful hours, right? You need that person to work.
Exactly.
And
but remember, but Mike, remember this. Remember during the height of the Iraq War, the infantry units would go over for 7 months, come back for 7 months, and go back again. And we were in the reserves. I was called up twice in a 2 or 3 year period for 2 years and another year. So someone who's going through this would be off the deployment cycle. So, I mean, somebody else has taken that person's place. Is that fair to send somebody else in someone's place to a combat area who's been numerous times? Because remember, there was one Marine at MHG did 8 combat deployments by 2012. Is it fair to keep sending the same individuals back again?
Well, and then when you come back, somebody's got to support the training up in 29 Palms, right? One of the great educations I got when Master Guns and I served together was every division has a communications battalion, intel battalion, what we call radio battalion, which is essentially electronic warfare. Now, every time you go do something, these Marines go. Everything that happens, they have to go.
Correct. Yeah.
And they have a both in training and in combat, they support everything. They go nonstop. They go nonstop. At Camp Pendleton, the comm battalion is called 9th Comm. Okay? It is euphemistically called 9th Crime. Right?
Correct.
Because they have historically had issues. And one of the contributing factors of those issues is their op tempo. They go all the time. And then they get kids that are wore out, and they do stupid stuff. And so, yeah, 9th crime. And
but you make a great point. The op tempo is huge. So let's say they were going every 7 months, they were deploying. You don't just come home and sit for 7 months. You get a little break of a couple of weeks, and then you go right back into the training cycle. And as you get ready for the deployment, you're always in the field. Going to this train, and depends what rank you are. If you're a staff NCO or an officer, you are extremely busy. When everybody's off, you're still in the office, getting the training schedules, getting all this stuff done.
Yeah.
So if somebody was into something like this and up can't go, they're in a non-deployable status. How does that affect everybody else?
Well, we know how it does. For instance, let's just say Master Guns was having problems with concussions. He can't go, but we expect him. He can't support this one, but he's going on the next one. So we're just going to flip-flop these two guys. That's not what we're talking about. Or, yeah, he's going to have to go through therapy. It'll take him 6 months, so he's going to do this one, and this one, and not these three. We're not talking about that. Okay, we're talking about being shelved for any kind of deployable service for, you know,
an extended period of time.
Yeah, for 5 to 10 years. So to me, come on, that's ridiculous. So it's
or even you said 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
Are you going to keep re-enlisting somebody who's non-deployable?
Yeah, how does that happen? They have to go. They would have to go into some. Yeah. So you can see it's ridiculous. Honestly, I mean it is to ask the Department of Defense, and I will tell you, the Marine Corps has an issue with not getting rid of people that they should get issued because they feel the sense of loyalty to them, and they want to help them get better, and they keep them around too long. And so, you know, which is fine, and I understand it, but it impacts readiness. We had a whole shop full of people.
Oh, my gosh, we did.
Of people that were post-traumatic stress, they were wounded in combat, and they were waiting, they were undergoing medical, psychological evaluations, medical evaluations, and being med boarded and out of the Marine Corps. But the Marine Corps has this penchant of, we don't want to let you go. If you tell us you want to be a Marine, you know, we'll kind of find a way for you. You know, that's the instinct. And sometimes that's a bad instinct to keep people around. But this is beyond that. This is that you're not going to be full up round anytime soon. And I just don't think that's fair to the DOD. But there's no editorial comment about you want to be transgender. Nobody cares. Your patriotism, nobody questions that. It's simply an operational readiness issue. So to me, that's right.
And that goes back to those who are pushing this issue, never served in the country or the military. They don't know how the operational tempo is because they're not part of it.
They don't care.
They don't care. I mean,
how's it polling in the district?
It's a good wedge issue. It really galvanizes one segment, but it's... Is this going to make the U.S. military more lethal? I don't see how it can.
Well, the numbers are evidently so small. I just think it's unfair to ask people to bear that burden when you. And I don't care what would shelve you. What would shelve you for a period of 5 to 10 years? It doesn't matter to me. You can't. You're not effective. You can't stay. You can't re-enlist. I'm sorry. So good luck. I know nobody, you know, good luck, all the best. But we're not hating on you. But
no, it's nothing to do with hate. It's just this is an operational issue.
Yeah, we're not aligned. Where you're going and where we're going are in two different directions. So anyway. All right, what's tell everybody where they find the Ubaldi Report.
You can go two ways. On the website, just go to UbaldiReports.com, or you can go on Facebook and just type in Ubaldi Reports, and you'll pop me up.
There you go. All right. John Ubaldi, retired Master Gunnery Sergeant, United States Marine Corps, living in Tampa, sweating when he's swimming. There you have it. All right, Master Guns, have a good day. Thanks for the visit.
All right, take care,
guys. All right, see ya. We're going to talk. Mike McDowell is going to join us. Former Marine. We're going to talk about him and what he's doing these days. And so don't touch that dial because he's part of an organization called the Soldiers Project and pretty interesting stuff they have going in terms of treating. Doesn't matter how your discharge was characterized, they'll treat your dependents. So interesting stuff. More of All Marine Radio coming up, hour 2 on the All Warrior Radio Network.